absolute disaster week for Bitcoin and stocks. Is a recession coming? What is the Fed going to do about it? And how is it going to impact Bitcoin? Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. In today's global macro update, we are going to hit 7 major topics, and we are going to answer some of your questions. First, we'll talk about the Bitcoin price. Then we will break down the Japanese yen carry trade and how that is impacting the rest of financial markets. Then we'll get into the US dollar. Then fourth, we will talk about US Treasury yields. Fifth, the labor market and the US economy more broadly. Then we will talk about the US yield curve, bull steepening, what that means. And finally, the stock market. Is it topping out here? What is happening in stocks? Then we will get into a lot of your questions, and you guys really want to know, how are these recessionary fears going to impact Bitcoin? We'll get into it all. All right, the first topic is the Bitcoin price. It's falling dramatically, but I know you guys want to know, where is the support? When is it going to bounce here? So, not financial advice. We're just looking at our own trend lines. This is our way to measure sentiment in the market. If we get a bounce here at this yellow ascending trend line, which at our numbers right now is at about 51,400, it will confirm that this trend is still alive. If it can't hold this 51,400 area, it does expose Bitcoin to a lot further downside, so maybe the mid to low 40s. Now, because we are not looking at this from a trading perspective, we're more looking at it from a narrative perspective, we look at the price as a signal. Is the market bullish or bearish? And around these key levels, what is the behavior of the market? So how it behaves here between 51 and 54,000 is going to be key for sentiment going forward. If you hold it, you have those bulls hanging on to their bull thesis and willing to come in, support the market. If it doesn't, you'll have some people abandon their bull thesis and give up. When they give up, oftentimes that leads to a cascading Bitcoin price to the downside, sometimes marking a low in the price and giving Bitcoin finally an opportunity to bounce as all the sellers have now cleared the space. So that's the type of capitulation selling we've seen in Bitcoin in the past. We are basically cautious here, right? And in this global macro environment, I know a lot of you guys are watching and listening today because you know that we are watching rates, stocks, and you know that it impacts Bitcoin. And so with stocks in a very precarious position right now, it is right to be fearful as a Bitcoin long. Now, that is why we look at these levels, these technical levels, because it can give us guidance if our approach to the consolidation still stands. The consolidation of Bitcoin, which has been really in effect since March, has been an ongoing chop between the 70s and the 50s. And so if the 50s continue to hold, that consolidation narrative can hold. But if Bitcoin's correlation remains very high to stocks and stocks remain in this mini crash formation, it is dangerous for Bitcoin. So that's why we're watching it. We don't claim to know what's going to happen in the short, medium, or long term. Our views, though, are very clear here. We are in a consolidation in Bitcoin, but Bitcoin is trading at the low end of its range and is in danger if it loses that low end of the range of testing some much lower levels. But in the medium to long term, we do expect Bitcoin to catch a bid from this liquidity wave that we do expect to come. So we'll talk about that as we go. But just because we are expecting a liquidity response, that doesn't mean Bitcoin can't test some pretty nasty numbers. So let's bottom line it here on Bitcoin price. 51,400 is our level right now on the chart. In this area, we really are looking to see how Bitcoin behaves. If we can't hold this level, then in our next video, we'll zoom out and look at what else is below. But on the chart right now, in those 40s, the low 40s, we do see some support there as well. The Bitcoin Layer is proud to be sponsored by Unchained, the leader in Bitcoin financial services. Unchained empowers you to take full control of your Bitcoin with collaborative multi-sig vaults where you hold two of three keys and benefit from a Bitcoin security partner. This is a really important feature. You can purchase Bitcoin directly into your cold storage with Unchained's trading desk and completely eliminate your exchange risks. Unchained also offers the best IRA product in the industry. You can convert easily your 401k or IRA into Bitcoin while keeping control of your keys. Don't pay more in taxes than you have to. Go talk to them today, unchained.com/TBL, and make sure you use code TBL for $99 off when you create an account. Imagine losing your Bitcoin fortune to a house fire or to accidental damage. A complete nightmare, right? It's estimated that over 30% of Bitcoin are lost forever, and poor seed phrase security is a big reason why. That is why we use Stampseed, a really cool DIY kit that allows you to stamp your seed into these titanium plates. So let me show you how it works. They send you a titanium plate. Part of the kit comes with this really easy to use tracker. You slide your seed phrase into the tracker. Now you take the letters that they send you, you take a letter out, and you place it into your device, and then you take this incredibly heavy duty titanium hammer, and you hammer your letters into this titanium plate. Your full seed phrase will be stamped into this titanium plate that is fireproof, accident-proof, damage-proof. These tools have been specifically designed by people working in titanium stamping for over 14 years. So go check them out today, stampseed.com, and make sure you use code TBL for 15% off of your order. Now we are going to talk about global macro a lot today. It is our thesis that global macro matters for Bitcoin because we have empirical correlation between Bitcoin and the stock market, and we are studying the stock market and how it is impacted by interest rates and the financial system at large. That's a concept that we are calling TBL liquidity in our new model, inspired by Michael Howell's cross-border capital liquidity model. We are looking forward to having Michael Howell on a few times over the next couple months to talk about his liquidity outlook. That is to say that it all matters for Bitcoin. We're going to talk about the yen carry trade and treasury yields and the stock market, but it is all part of global macro. That's the approach that we take here. So let's start with global FX, the yen, and the carry trade. Now, I'm going to try to summarize what the carry trade is very briefly so that you can understand what's happening right now, which is the unwind. So what is the carry trade? Historically, the Japanese yen has been a currency that has had a very low interest rate relative to the rest of the world. And so the history of this trade is that investors have borrowed yen at 0 to 1% interest rates and taken that capital, swapped it into, let's say, dollars, for example, and invested in T-bills at 4 or 5%. And so you're paying 1% on the borrow, you're earning 4% on the yield, and that is your carry. So your positive carry, or your carry here, is the amount of yield that you are generating above and beyond what your borrowing costs. So you have your negative carry, which is your borrow, and that's happening in yen. You have your positive carry, which is happening in dollars. They occur simultaneously, but as long as nothing happens to the exchange rate, it's free money for you as an investor. And so that's why that free money attraction is what brings investors into the game. Now, how can investors lose their shorts? If the currency moves against them, of course, is one way. And that's what we see happening here. So let's bring up the next chart. The Japanese yen here is shown against the dollar. Now, when the chart moves higher, that's dollar strength and yen weakness. And when the chart moves lower here, it's yen strength. And so what have we seen over the last couple years? A lot of weakness in the yen, but all of a sudden that started to reverse a couple months ago. And so this chart is showing you a dramatic fall in USD JPY, which means an appreciation of the yen. What does that do? It threatens the carry trade because all of a sudden you have all these positions that have borrowed yen, but they have to pay back yen. And if the yen is strengthening, they're looking at their trade and saying, is it worth it to keep my trade on? Now, in the example, I mentioned that the trade is in T-bills, but it's also in stocks. It's also in risk assets. You borrow from the cheapest source of funding and you invest in anything, not just bills. So when the yen strengthens, this carry trade starts to require positions to be closed, long positions to be closed all over the financial markets. And so you have stocks going down because a global wave of carry trade closures is basically triggering a contraction of leverage. And that's the key. It's not that people are all of a sudden buying stocks and then selling stocks. No, it's actually that leverage enters the system with the carry trade. It's money that comes into existence as if from nowhere. Because when you borrow yen, that's a synthetic loan. And when you invest in risk, you're doing so in future. So that's a synthetic position. So most of this carry trade is existing in the synthetic universe. But it impacts prices, of course. Synthetic trades impact prices. And so what you see when the yen strengthens is a global contraction of leverage. And in that contraction of leverage, stocks go down, Bitcoin goes down. Now, quickly, I want to mention volatility because volatility is the name of the game. It's how we know when the Fed is going to respond or when we have this idea of a Fed put. Remember, the Fed put is the idea that if risk markets spill and volatility spikes, the Fed will come in either verbally or physically with the printing press or some sort of policy measure to ease worry in the markets. And so the Fed put is really a volatility expression. Well, I wouldn't say expression, but the Fed put is a meme that is derived from the options market. Okay, so how it works in options theory is that volatility that is measured by the VIX is implied volatility from options pricing in the stock market. So when investors are buying calls and buying puts, but more importantly, buying puts on stocks, what they are doing is saying, I need to hedge my position. I need to cap my downside. And that is expensive. And it becomes increasingly expensive as more and more people want to make that trade and put that trade on. So the buying of puts is the spiking of volatility itself. Now, who is going to be the suppressor of volatility and actually come in and sell those puts to the scared investors? In traditional markets or in basic economics, it should be some market participant that is willing to say, okay, that's a large enough premium for me to collect, so I will sell that option to you. But now we have this idea that the Fed is going to be the one to come in and sell that volatility. So the put for the stock market investors doesn't actually have to be purchased because the Fed gives it to them. And the Fed gives it to them because when volatility spikes, the Fed says, oh, by the way, we are going to come in and lower rates. Oh, we're going to lower them 50 basis points next meeting. Now we're going to lower them 2% over the next few meetings. So they'll increase the amount of protection for investors as things get worse and worse. That is the expectation. And now a lot of your questions from social media today submitted to me were basically along the lines of what is going to happen in a crisis? Is the Fed going to come in and save the game? How is Bitcoin going to respond in a credit event? And it really comes down to this Fed put. Nobody knows when it's coming in, and the Fed has tried to convince everyone that the market will be okay without it. But I find it hilarious because just over a year ago, in spring of 2023, we had a mini financial crisis, and it was a financial crisis. Trust me, I was watching it. I was live on the I was live tweeting it for you guys because it was actually getting out of hand incredibly quickly. Now, it didn't turn into a full-blown financial crisis because the Fed, Treasury, and ECB all coordinated on their response, and the SNB, I should mention too, all coordinated on their response so quickly that it made everyone forget there was even a financial crisis, and now we don't even call it that. We just call it Silicon Valley to paper over the fact that actually there was a crisis going on, even though it was triggered possibly by this one bank that would have triggered all of this payroll default and cascading of missed payments throughout the U.S. financial system. And we agree that that would have been the case there. And so there was a crisis that was on the cusp of happening, and it was pushed back by this swift policy response. So the idea of the Fed put is stronger than ever, and people are just so used to the idea that the Fed will come in really swiftly, even though the Fed is trying to convince you at the same time that the market is going to be okay, that it can continue to do quantitative tightening, and it can just continue to run down the balance sheet. It can continue to keep rates well into restrictive territory. Notice how they say now we're going to cut, and the market has it priced at around 25 basis points for the first cut. The Fed doesn't want to panic the market by cutting too fast, but it's pretty obvious that the market is expecting the Fed to get on with it at that speed anyway, because things are getting worse and worse within the risk metrics and the expectation. And that's what really we have to focus on when it comes to the Fed put, when it comes to the recession, when it comes to the Fed bailout. It's all the same thing. When is the Fed going to step in, and how much pain are they willing to let occur in the risk markets? Now, because that is the $1 trillion question, or should I say $35 trillion question, I really don't know, guys. And that's what we have to expect here, is that you will get a response that triggers the Fed response, and that liquidity wave will impact Bitcoin. That is the grand thesis that we have. That is why Bitcoin continues to cycle up, not cycle down. It cycles up because the Fed put and the whole idea of infinite bailouts continues to be confirmed. And that backs a higher market value for Bitcoin over the long term. So we say God bless you to the traders and those that are willing to come in and time the market. But I know most of you, the vast majority of you, are more in the hodler camp. You're in the investor camp. You're not in the quick trading camp, that otherwise you wouldn't really be watching this channel, because we're not here we're not actually telling you, hey, below 51,400, here's the level to buy. Okay? I know the risk management levels in the low 40s. We can talk about that if we get there. But our goal isn't to tell you where to buy if it loses 51.4. It's to explain to you that if it loses 51.4, it's going to be a symptom of something global macro. There will be pain. How much pain, we don't know. Then the policy response will trigger buying across the risk spectrum, including Bitcoin, and you're going to wish that you had just HODLed, basically, at that point. So I don't know how low, and I don't know when, and one of your questions, I shouldn't even say one, many of your questions were when moon. And also, I don't know the answer to that, but I know you guys understand that the message is HODL, okay? The cycles show that if you hold long enough, the reward is to the HODLer. Now, third, I want to talk about the dollar real quick. So we're staying here on global FX. Remember that the dollar is a financial condition on the rest of the world. And when we go risk off, the dollar catches a bid. But the dollar also responds to yields and changes in treasury yields. So on the margin, what affects the dollar? If yields go lower, the dollar's attractiveness will go down. So the dollar falls. But if there's a broad risk off move, you can see yields go lower as people buy treasuries, but they also sell other currencies and buy the dollar. So the dollar actually strengthens. And today we see a little bit of a hint of that. The dollar getting a little bit of strength, yields coming down as there's a risk off bid here and a slowing growth bid on the back of the labor market, which we'll talk about in a second here. But the way that the dollar is bouncing here at around 100 on the DXY, it's something that we want to keep our eye on, because if the dollar remains strong, or at least it has a little bit of a bounce here, that is going to be a challenge to global financial markets. A dollar that is going down is an easing financial condition for the global financial system. And a dollar that is not going down is really not doing enough for getting easy financial conditions. Now, I should mention something about easy financial conditions. We have flagged for you guys that conditions are already easy. But I can guarantee you that when the next week's indices come out and they are refreshed, that you will see a slight increase there, because it's derived from volatility. It's derived from spreads. It's derived from risk. And so when stocks go down, volatility is going up and market making slows down and financial conditions tighten. So one of the things that we've talked about, a few times here with Craig Shapiro, I would suggest you guys go check out our latest episode with him. We talked about how quickly financial conditions respond to changes in policy rhetoric. So as much as a few speeches can actually chop around financial conditions much more quickly than I've ever been used to, but it's important to start working it into your framework. So you should be working it into your own framework, that something like the Jackson Hole speech from Jerome Powell can chop around financial conditions within hours, within days, and that move can trigger its own response and own follow-up speeches from policymakers that whip it around the other way. So everything is moving very fast. This is why we have to watch not only the financial markets, but the Fed speak, because they are trying to guide the market in real time. And by the market, I mean rates and financial conditions, which means risk. Okay, fourth on our list here is Treasury yields themselves. You guys know where we've stood for a long time. We've expected this rounding top in the front end of the yield curve. It rounded, it topped, it broke down. Yields are going toward 3.5%. That's really the magnet that we see, really, and it's happening across the curve. And so even though it was our expectation that we could get a little bit of a bounce, the bounce just didn't hold. And what did we say actually that could negate any bounce or confirm any bounce? It was the labor market itself. This week we had weak JOLTS data, which is falling job openings. It just means there's less people that are, or less companies that have listings out there for job seekers. Then today we had non-farm payrolls. We know that the headline number is highly, highly manipulated. We had that massive 818,000 job revision to the negative side. So it makes the NFP number really quite worthless on a month-to-month basis. But the market didn't love what it saw. Another downward revision today for the last couple months, and not a great headline number today. So the market took that, and it didn't have any treasury selling life in it. The yields chopped around a little bit for sure, but yields cannot get back to 4%, 4.5%. Physically, they can't do it with growth expectations falling, recession expectation creeping up, and the policy rate expectation really cratering here, guys. Remember we talked about the probability of the distribution of probabilities. Remember we talked about the probability distribution in terms of what traders are thinking. There's a 20% chance that rates could be cut all the way to zero in a financial crisis. There's 20% chance the economy recovers and we don't need cuts, and a 60% chance that we need modest cuts, and they position themselves accordingly. Well, there are a ton of investors out there that have small positions on that are betting on an outright crisis that are actually adding to their positions right now. And that's what you have to keep in mind when you see yields scream down in these mini moves. It's an immense amount of buying pressure on the market, and that is a signal that you have huge bets on very low rates coming in. It's an enormous amount of duration buying, speculative buying, to hedge the position that risk is going to fall out, and we need duration. We need exposure to medium and long-term treasuries. So the move lower here in yields is a large signal. Now, we talked about jolts, and we talked about non-farm payrolls, which are not a great signal to us. Jolts are a great labor data metric, and we think the unemployment rate itself is decent, and that stayed elevated at 4.2%. So in general, the labor market slowing is a factor. Now, remember that the spot economy is still showing positive GDP and quite decent GDP still. So everyone's waiting for that shoe to drop, but the rates market is pricing in a really big growth slowdown here. Now, in the next part here, I want to talk about the yield curve. We've mentioned the bull steepening, and we finally had that uninversion. This chart is captioned "I see orange again" because we finally got out of negative territory for the twos, tens yield curve, and it is coming with a bull steepener. It's not a bear steepener. Remember that the bull steepener is how we know that simultaneously growth and inflation expectations are slowing, and that cuts are being priced into the market or are already underway. That's what we saw in 2001. That's what we saw in 2008. And we are starting to see the beginnings of it now. Okay? A bull steepener is a recessionary signal. Full stop. We have to see how this unfolds, but we know how to interpret rates. And this is telling us that a rapid cut cycle is coming, even though we don't really think the Fed wants to scare everyone with a 50 basis point cut here in 12 days. And they will probably cut by 25 and say, and they'll guide lower, but it might not be enough. And that's the Fed put, that they don't want to admit that they have and that they're going to play. They don't want to admit that that's the card that they're going to play. And so now we might have finally reached the point at which risk markets say, hey, Fed, you have to save me. And I can promise you guys that it's going to take a lot more than a couple bad weeks in the stock market to trigger that Fed put. So let's bring up that next chart in risk markets. The S&P 500 unable to avoid the double top. It's something that we had our eye on. You had this top around 5,700, a big spill, a recovery. But if the recovery can't get back up to the top, fails at a level that's just shy, that's a double top or a lower high. They're frankly the same thing from a technical perspective, because remember, we don't care about technical analysis because we're chopping it around as traders. We care about behavior of buyers and sellers. And what does the behavior tell you? The bulls said, I'm out at 5,700, or they didn't even reach 5,700 and they said, I'm out. It's not worth it to me. So that's a change in sentiment. And rate cuts that are coming 25 at a time is not a Fed put. Trust me. That's not going to do anything. One of your questions was, hey, does 25 or 50 basis point cut do anything for corporates? No, it doesn't. Yields trade out the curve, 5, 10 year yields trade independently of Fed expectations. The 5 year a little bit more, but it's really the forward expectations of the yield curve that is where the corporates trade. So they've been benefiting from lower yields for a long time, for several months, all the corporates have. So they like it. They like falling yields. 25 basis points does nothing for them. And so who does 25 basis points of a cut help? It actually helps nobody. And even by the Fed's admission, they're way into restrictive territory. So it's not until they get rates below 3% that they actually feel like they themselves are helping the economy. That's wild, guys. And you have to take that into account. Policy rates are at 5.5. They are going to get slashed. They are going to get slashed. I don't know when, but they can't just get cut by 25, 25, 25. That is a total fantasy world. It won't happen. Eventually, the cuts have to get steep enough to get the policy rate to 3.5%. Now, you do the math. If they do 25 at a time and you have to go down 3%, or just say call it 2.5%, you have to cut 10 times. They don't even meet 10 times in a year. So if they want to help the economy, and don't forget, policy rates don't affect the economy until a 6, 9, 12, 18, 24-month lag. So you're telling me that the Fed will cut baby cuts and not even start getting to the point where they're helping the economy until 2025 at the end, which won't hit the economy till 2026 with the unemployment rate going up where it is today? No. And we're so far away from it's a ridiculous notion to think that we are going to get baby cuts, because that's actually not how it works at all. We now are in an environment of mini financial crises. That's actually the norm. My mentor would always tell me the Seven Sigma events, which are supposed to happen only once in 1,000 years, happen once every 10 years, then once every 5 years, then once every 3 years. They're getting more and more regular. It's not a healthy system, ladies and gentlemen. It's why you're in Bitcoin, because you innately understand this. It's not a sustainable system that depends on many financial crises responded by Fed puts. That is not something that can go on forever, but yet it does. So instead of us being here telling you that the financial system is going to crumble, no, we actually warn you of the dangers, explain to you how it works, and observe as it continues to go into financial crisis, bailout, financial crisis, bailout. We had one get underway in 2020 before we went on the air here at the Bitcoin Layer. Then we had one in 2023, last year, Silicon Valley, which we covered in real time. We expect to have another one. We don't know when, but we expect to be covering these until they stop happening. And it's not like this is the business cycle anymore. This is way beyond the days of talking about the business cycle. We live in a debt-based system with rollover concerns. This is, again, in the cross-border capital school of debt rollover. That required debt rollover has to be financed, and it has to, a lot of it has to be created out of thin air. And so that depends on confidence, and it's very far away from where the risks, where the business cycle is. And it has a lot to do with these bailout waves and many financial crises that we are having. So that is how we are thinking about these markets. And now you understand a lot of your questions are, hey, what happens in a credit event? And then what? And then when moon? It's all part of the same theme here. It's that the liquidity waves are a response to the system breaking down because of its fragility. Now, one quick note on the stock market, and I'm going to go from our beautiful macro bond charts here to the candles themselves. Look at the weekly candle on the S&P 500 and the size of it. Okay, these large red candles are an expression of behavior. This is very far from technical analysis, horoscope, voodoo. This is raw investor behavior. And the size of the red weekly candle on the S&P 500 should tell you something. It should tell you fear is present. And when will fear stop being present? When somebody is there to sell that volatility and say, hey, it's okay. I got your downside. I will sell you that put. I will sell vol. And right now, we are in an environment where the only vol sellers are the policymakers themselves, the Fed and the U.S. government. And it can be fiscal or monetary stimulus that saves the day, or both. But that is the put in the system. Now, one of your questions was about the election. Do I think the election matters for Bitcoin more broadly? You know, for financial markets, not necessarily. I have my bias on where I prefer tax policy to be and where I prefer Bitcoin policy to be. But in the end, the market will play out. So even if the wrong party gets in November, they'll be strapped within a couple years by midterm elections, and the cycle just keeps going there. Markets in the end win out, and they actually tell you what the electorate is feeling. So let's not concern ourselves necessarily with the outcome of the November election having anything to do with liquidity, which we know is driven by central bankers, which are independent. And I put that in air quotes because it means those, the central bankers, it's the banker's bank. So it's driven by what banks need. And the government is doing what they need to stay in power. So if they need to bail out the system, do fiscal stimulus, that's what they will do regardless of which party it is. Okay, now let's get to your questions here. I think I've answered most of these naturally throughout the program today, but I want to just go through each of the questions that I had flagged to make sure I'm answering what you guys wanted to ask me today. Okay, so Craig says, how will Bitcoin react in a credit event? We've covered that, right? In a credit event means the risk just stops being bid. Everything goes bidless. And that is actually what has been happening here in these mini financial crises. I know because I pick up the phone and I call my friends on the street and on the buy side and I ask them what's going on. And they say no bid. It means all risk managers call the desk and say you cannot buy. It's over until somebody comes in with some bailout. And that is what the nature of the system that we're in. So what happens in a credit event? Everything goes no bid, and then the Fed comes in with something. So what will happen to Bitcoin? Guys, look at the chart, and if it doesn't hold, basically it's going to the next level down. And Bitcoin has a very unique property in which it can react quicker, more quickly than any other financial market to the expected policy bailout. So if Bitcoin, and that's why Bitcoin has these huge wick downs. So let's imagine it loses 51,400. It wicks down to 44,000 or 42,000, and it wicks back up to 51,400 all within 24 to 48 hours. You might have washed out every last person that was fearful, and now you only have hodlers, and now you've actually cleared the path for a mega rally in advance of the bailout that might not come for maybe more time, and it might bounce way before stocks do. So those are all possible outcomes. Will rate cuts be enough to outweigh negative economic stats and markets? That's what I'm trying to tell you about the baby 25 basis point cuts. Those are not going to do it. So the Fed will eventually have to do more than baby cuts, and only when it gets intense enough will the market say, okay, that's a put. That's protection for me. I can lift my own protection because the Fed's got my back. We don't know when that's going to happen. And remember, think all the way back to the beginning of this publication in 2021, and I know many of you were there. We said, hey, the Fed is going to raise rates, but it has its reputation on the line. So it's not just going to race to cut rates if you get a little stock market spill. And look now, 3 years later, not only did they hike, they hiked all the way to 5.5% and they kept it there for a year. So they really care about not being bailout Fed. Now, they lost some of that credibility, a ton of it actually, last year with Silicon Valley and BTFP, a new bailout facility that had to expand their balance sheet in the midst of QT. So really talking out of both sides of their mouth. But that is what we are seeing from the Fed, is that eventually they do have to come in and show the market that they're there to support. But when will they do that? They want to protect their reputation on one hand, but on the other hand, we had Silicon Valley, and basically within days they came in with a new bailout package. So that is how we have to analyze the Fed. We do feel like these financial crises are getting shorter and shorter in their duration. And so that can also mean that they can be much more intense in their downside, because the market knows it has to get the put. It has to get the Fed reaction. And so how do you get it? Not only do you sell hard. You sell everything. You go bidless. You call your desk and you say no bid. Don't make the market. Then the Fed gets a call from the head of the desk of Citi and says, hey, the markets are frozen. And by the way, the word frozen is thrown around these days. That was happening in 2023 in March. The market went frozen. High yield completely frozen. Issuance completely stopped. The Fed gets the tap on the shoulder and they say, hey, you got to come back in. Everything is stopped. The financial markets have stopped working. Not financial markets, sorry. The capital markets have stopped working. If we can't get issuance, we can't sell a bond. Okay? And that can happen quicker than anybody can expect. If the stock market crashed intensely enough, by the end of next week, you would have all the bond deals stop. So that's the downside. The Fed is aware. They're also aware of how quickly they have to come back. So that's the framework, guys. Jesse, who we just had on the show, go check out Jesse's episode in which we talk about Lightning Network and his great company, Amboss, and all the things that they're doing on Lightning Network routing economics. Jesse asks, are we in a recession yet? No, we're not. We could be soon, but we're not in a recession yet. I can categorically say that here in September. We are just not in a recession yet. There's a lot of debt out there. Will we see defaults or bailouts? You know, corporates have financial power, especially to tap the bond market. And they have the advantage of what we just talked about, which is that if the bond market stops, the Fed comes in and bails out. and bails out. And not that they come in and buy the corporate bonds directly, but they come and buy something to get the markets going again, right? In BTFP, it was treasuries. In QE, it's treasuries and mortgages. And other times during the pandemic, they actually bought ETFs. So we know that the Fed will do anything that it takes. Vineet asks, the actual borrowing that companies or individuals do happens at the higher end of the yield curve. Yes, we answered that question already. M4X asks, when liquidity, sir? I think that we've answered that. When Moon, asked by Ray, I believe that we have answered that as well. Death Cab to QE, which is a very clever handle, says, why does anyone still believe government economic metrics can be trusted? They can't. That's why we look at ISM. We don't look at CPI and NFP. These numbers are BS and they're lagging and highly manipulated. We look at private data sources, ISM manufacturing, ISM services. It's all the signal that you basically need. These have told us that the economy is not great and has been and really slowed down as of a couple years ago when the Fed got super hawkish and inflation just got everybody's starting to slow down on their economic activity. And it also tells us that manufacturing is in a recession, to answer Jesse's question, but it's not in a recession from a services standpoint, which is most of the economy, which was Jesse's question. The answer that we're not in recession is because ISM services is about 51. And so it just means that we are in the most modest of modest expansions, services broadly, bad manufacturing, which means a recession is right there. Real estate, by the way, go check out our episode with Melody Wright. It gave me, it honestly, I'm going to be honest with you guys. When I know rates are going lower, I get a funny feeling. And I had it in 2019. And I've been having it this year, and it intensified yesterday with my conversation with her. The economic slowdown is more broad than we could ever imagine. The lagging effects of a housing slowdown are more broad than we can ever imagine. And the lowering treasury yields off of the back of lowered growth and inflation expectations and rate cuts, it's really more dramatic than the probability distribution spits out, which is at yields at 3.5%. Okay, yields are going a lot lower over that medium term, and they're going to get slashed in the policy end of the curve. We are certain of that. It just might take time. Constantine asks, everyone seems to be waiting for November. We've discussed the election. Frank asks, can the great liquidity absorber chop sideways / down for a sustained period if global M2 is breaking out and in expansion mode? We don't look at M2. We have a much more refined view of liquidity. So first of all, go check out our free research publication at thebitcoinlayer.com/subscribe. And if you are a professional or you're someone that is looking for research help with asset management, asset allocation, we provide a new TBL liquidity metric that is really going under the hood with the financial system, looking at yields, looking at volatility, and looking at the financial system way past M2 to give us a beat on what's going on. What do we think can happen with liquidity? When liquidity pops via the banking system expanding, lower yields, and volatility suppression, Bitcoin is going to pop too. What happens via M2 is not really within our framework. Cliff asks, do you expect money market / cash equivalents to start seeing outflows as we approach a less restrictive monetary stance? And if so, do you expect them to flow into risk assets, growth, equities, and Bitcoin? This is a fantastic question, Cliff. And there's a two-part answer. At the beginning, you expect money market flows to increase because risk assets are being sold. But once they get cut, again, once you get past the baby cuts, once you get a steep enough curve, the curve will be your indicator, Cliff. That's the real answer to your question. Once the curve is steep, 50, 100, 150 basis points, that's when the market is telling you, we think that the policy rate is low enough, we're going to sell money markets and we're going to buy other stuff. So watch the yield curve. That's why it's such an important signal. I hope you guys learned from today's episode. Please submit your questions. Like this episode, subscribe to the channel. If you are a listener, we know that you're missing out on some of the visuals here, but it would mean a lot to us if you rate and review on your favorite podcast platform. Check us out at thebitcoinlayer.com/subscribe, and we'll catch you guys next time.